Good morning, everyone. Very good to see you all out. Thankful for your presence this morning. I'm hopeful that it's been encouraging to you thus far. It's been encouraging to me. And I'm hoping that we will do more to conform to Christ. As already mentioned multiple times, we have VBS upcoming, so please get registered, get signed up. It's a really good way for us to get to know each other better, and more importantly, to know the love of God. Now, I have a bad habit that I've been working on for quite a while, and I'm sure that you have a similar one or in some form. So I have an alarm that goes off on my phone in the morning. I reach over to that device, and I turn off the alarm, and then I pick up that device, and I start looking, and I start scrolling. And before my day starts, even potentially sometimes before I say my morning prayer, I'm already frustrated. I'm already disappointed. I'm already filled with despair. I have a little two by four inch idol in my pocket that will determine how the rest of my day is going to go. Real serious issue. I've been working on it for a bit. And that's what we are encouraged to do. We are encouraged to consume all this information and to let it control us. And we got to learn to fight back. And the ways that we fight back are with faith and with hope and with love. And so the best way that we can work on these practices and building them into our lives, I would argue, is through meditation. And so whenever you think about meditation, whenever you hear that word, you're probably drawn into particularly Far Eastern religions. And whenever meditation has a lot to do with incense and with gongs and with stretches and things like that. Now, whenever we think about meditation in a Christian lens, It should be a little bit different, right? Because a lot of the Eastern experiences is we are trying to separate ourselves out from the physical. What is down here is so bad that all I want to do is disconnect. Instead, when we understand it as Christians, there's supposed to be some different things that come to mind. Firstly, the Hebrew word that meditation comes from is Haggah, which actually means to murmur, to speak. And so, whenever we are doing something like reading out loud, or praying out loud, or reciting scripture out loud, those are all practices of meditation as the Hebrews would understand it. And this is an important thing because the world gets very, very loud and tries to distract and tries to inform in all sorts of different ways, and then we try to respond to it by praying quietly and reading to ourselves. Instead, it should be, I need to do these things out loud to be reminded of what God has done. I need to hear other people say this. I need to hear my own voice say things about the goodness of God. Another thing is important to recall and to contemplate. That's another important part of meditation. Paul says something about this in Philippians chapter 4 and verse 8. He says, finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there's any excellence, if there's anything worthy of praise, think about these things. And so it requires this contemplation on things that are good. The world is a very busy place, full of lots of information, filled with despair. And that is why my speaking theme when I preach this year is going to be centered around meditation. I'm hoping that I do a better job than I did last year of communicating the theme. One of the things I think is very important is learning to teach ourselves to reflect on these things of God to give us hope. Now, my four goals for this year, hopefully in my teaching. The first thing is to have you be able to understand what meditation is. I hope you'll be able to define it, both how the Hebrews understand it and something along like what Paul says in Philippians chapter 4 and verse 8. The second thing is I want to encourage you to partake in spiritual practices because we cannot just say, all right, I want to be more meditative or to dwell with God more and then not take active steps to do so. And so I already tried to do a lot of application. I really want to be emphasizing here are practices that will be helpful. And also, I hope that you'll be able to see me exercising the same ones. The third thing is to give you reminders of the goodness of God, the strength of God, why He can be relied upon this year. I originally wrote this as saying, when he can be relied upon, when you're going through suffering. But that's inaccurate. We need God all the time. And so the hope is, as you think about these things, whether you're high or you're low, I can trust in the Lord. And finally, my hope is out of Psalm 19, where we're going to be focusing, verse 14. I hope that you'll be able to memorize it by the end of this year. It's only four lines. It's not that long. If you do all of Psalm 19, I'll give you a handshake or something. But all of Psalm 19 would be incredible. But particularly Psalm 19 and verse 14, that's where we're going to be aiming at. Now, speaking of Psalm 19, if you'd like to turn over there, we're going to try to get to our theme by reflecting on this psalm. I'm going to open up by reading verse 1 through verse 6. To the choir master, a psalm of David. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the sky above proclaims his handiwork. Day to day pours out speech, and night to night reveals knowledge. There is no speech, nor are there words whose voice is not heard. Their voice goes throughout all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. In them he has set a tent for the sun, which comes out like a bridegroom leaving his chamber, and like a strong man runs its course with joy. Its rising is from the end of the heavens, and its circuit to the end of them. And there is nothing hidden from its heat. So over the past pretty much 200 years, particularly in an American context, there has been this ongoing but frustrating battle between science and faith. The reason I find this discouraging or frustrating is twofold. The first thing is that science and faith are not trying to answer the same question in the first place. Science is trying to help us understand what is the natural world, what laws govern it, how do we understand that, and faith is the search of, is there a God out there? How do we understand how we interact with that God? How do we understand how we interact with one another? Not even the same question. The second thing is that there have been many scientists, both in our present and in the past, who saw their work as an extension of their worship. They saw what they were trying to do in understanding the natural world as giving glory to God. There's plenty of examples, and I have three up here on the board. Three quotes I thought were really good. So the first one comes from Charles Linnaeus, who was a botanist and a biologist. And he says, "Let us not set aside God's works, but guided by them, revere the Master." Michael Faraday, who is one of my brother's personal heroes, he's a pioneer of electric motors, and he says, "The book of nature we have to read is written by the finger of God." And finally, Louis Pasteur, who is a pioneer of bacteriology, the study of bacteria, he says, "The more I study nature, the more I stand amazed at the work of the Creator." Now, the list goes on and on. Galileo, Copernicus, Francis Bacon, George Washington Carver, Francis Collins, plenty of people who understood their work as honoring and worshiping the Lord as they tried to understand the world. And Psalm 19 leans in to that idea. We can see it right here in verse 1. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the sky above proclaims his handiwork. When is the last time that you just decided, "I'm going to take in the sky today? I'm going to go sit and watch the sunset and just ponder that"? Probably been a long time. Maybe not ever. And you know why? Because we live in a culture and a society that just is always pushing forward. We got to always be moving to the next activity. And so we don't sit and ponder and wonder and reflect. Because the sky is trying to teach us something. The sky is not saying, "Worship me." The sky is saying, "Look to the one who made me, worship him." The earth has been trying to say the same thing. That there's so many wonders for us to behold. We have so many opportunities to see what God has done around us. And instead of relying on him and trusting in him, we bury our heads in phones and computers and busy activities. And we don't stop to meditate. And we don't stop to reflect on what God has done. One of the things that's being attacked here in Psalm 19, I find pretty important, is idolatry. All right? Israel and a lot of their neighbors had an issue. They would see something and they say, "That thing deserves glory." And so in particular, it would be, in this case, we see in Psalm 19, the sun.
Egypt, where they came out of, they worship a sun god you may know of named Ra. And so, we think the sun is incredible. We think the sun is glorious. We bow down to this. And David attacks that idea by saying, actually, the sun has been given its strength, its power, all of that by God. God is the one who allows it to rejoice and do these incredible things to shine on the rest of the world. For us, the sun is around 91 million miles away. We can't look into it directly without potentially blinding ourselves. It holds planetary bodies in its orbit. It is that powerful, it is that strong, and nothing on this earth would work without it. And so how incredibly powerful must be the God who made that and gave it its purpose? That is the whole point. The skies, the earth, the sun is supposed to be drawing you to worship the Lord and to see his glory. But if we don't stop to meditate on those things, we're going to get a little bit lost there. All right. So we move on. Then nature teaches us about the glories of God and his strength. But we also have an important part of God's revelation that comes in his teaching. So we're going to read a little bit about that in verses 7 through 11. It says, "The law of the Lord is perfect, reviving the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The precepts of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The rules of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. More to be desired are they than gold, even much fine gold. Sweeter also than honey and drippings of the honeycomb. Moreover, by them is your servant warned, and in keeping them there is great reward." All right, so we have this transition. We move from the voice of nature to the voice of God. And what is God teaching us? This is a very important question for us to be thinking about, because there are many gods and many religions out there. And so what if one of your coworkers, one of your friends comes and asks you, why is it, you read the Bible and you try to take it seriously, why this God? You should have a good answer for that. About why you believe this one is not only true, but is also leading you to the true life. And David gives us his answer here. He begins by talking about the law of the Lord, or the Torah, the teaching of God. It is perfect as it revives the soul. In a lot of ways, when people think about the words of God, they view them as a burden. That there are these extra rules that have been placed upon me. That I got to stick to. But what David sees it as is true life. And I think we can think of examples of times when we think, oh man, this thing potentially could be a burden to me. It could be frustrating to me. But it actually helps me to live my life more clear-minded. The goal of the Lord is trying to call us in so that we live true human lives. Feeling weary and dead, rely on the Lord's teaching to bring you to life. The next line in verse 7 tells us that the testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. I'm not an expert in warranties, but I do find them quite fascinating. And you'll buy an object and it says, this thing has a 2-year warranty. You are trying to tell me that potentially this thing will work for 2 years. It's not very sure at all. But when we go to God, we have something that is sure, that when you press against it, when you rely on it, you're going to find it's going to be steadfast. It's going to hold you there. It's going to anchor you. And so the testimony of the Lord is sure as it makes wise the simple. A lot of people, when they say, I want to come to the Lord, it's because I want to get out of said situation. Or maybe I want to receive prosperity. That's not the promise. The promise is, though, that you will gain wisdom. That if you listen to him, you will be people of character and wisdom and integrity, which is far more important than the other things. In verse 8, it says that the commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes.
On Bonnie and I's first anniversary, we went to New Orleans, very cool city. But a not cool thing happened there. We were in a market, and we got scammed. Scamming is never fun to fall for. And so what was the scammer, as he was speaking to us, what was his motivation? It was to get money out of us. He did not care that he said he wasn't going to be there tomorrow. He didn't care that this was a rare item from his homeland. He did not care about any of that. He wanted money. When you think about God, God is not trying to scam you. He is not trying to pull anything over your head. What he is trying to do is, as verse 8 says, enlighten your eyes. You think that you holding on to the burden and the anger that you have is going to make you, I don't know, feel better. But forgiveness allows you to see clearly. You think hatred is going to make you, I don't know, stronger, feel more powerful. But love is what is stronger. God, listening to him, enlightens our eyes.
I think I skipped 8a.
My bad. So verse 8a, it says that the precepts of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. I think this is important as we think about what brings us the most joy. Maybe you've had in your life a teacher or a coach or parent who tells you, I'm proud of you. Those are moments that live with us for a really long time. And so to think of when we are acting in righteous ways, and doing things that may be difficult, but honoring the Lord in them, God's proud of us. That's something that can, there's nothing else, no price tag you can place on something like that. In verse 9, we see that the fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. There are very few things that we know about heaven specifically. The most important thing is that we are going to be in the place where God is. And I've heard quite a few people say that idea of heaven or things I've heard about heaven are boring. Maybe they've heard some bad ideas. But here's the thing. Whenever we think about God, he is a being who literally we cannot find the end of. He is that infinite. And so whatever a new day or whatever it is in heaven, we are going to constantly be learning something new and something more glorious and grander about the Lord than we knew before. That's an incredible thought. And so, God, understanding him and seeking him out, that endures forever. We also see that the rules of God are true and righteous altogether. That means that when God makes a judgment on something, he is not going to be pursuing any sort of injustice. He is going to do what is right by you and by everyone else. And that means when you listen to him, you are going to make these right judgments too. You are going to live a right life between God and other people. And so in these verses, we see that the teaching of the Lord is transformative to those who are willing to listen to its wisdom. But there are some things that can distract us from that wisdom. And we see one of the big ones there in verse 10. He says, more to be desired are they than gold. What are some of the reasons that people decide, I don't want to do what God has called me to do? We have a really important example of Jesus going to a man. The man says, what can I do to inherit eternal life? And Jesus says, hey, all that money, all this stuff, get rid of it, sell it, give it to the poor, and follow me. And the response is, no. There are plenty of times that we find different things that we desire more than the transformation that comes from God. We don't want to give all that up. But don't you want to be a person of integrity? Don't you want to be a person of righteousness? Is there not something more valuable in this earth than gold? And so he tells us that these things are more desired even than honey, sweet honey. And we also see in the warnings of God, where we fail to live up to good standards, but also to live as God has called us to, there is a great reward. To know the Lord, to be in right relationship with him, no gold can compare to that.
To understand God, to seek Him out, to seek His sweetness, that is what life is for. And so this brings us up to the last couple of verses. We reflected on the voice of nature and the power and the beauty of God. We talk about the voice of God. How is His teaching supposed to inform us? And then David, the psalmist, kind of stands in for us and speaks about his thoughts on all these things. In verse 12, it says, "Who can discern his errors? Declare me innocent from hidden faults. Keep back your servant also from presumptuous sins. Let them not have dominion over me. Then I shall be blameless and innocent of great transgression. May the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer." One of the most dangerous things that people do in our culture, and I think cultures throughout time, is we say that I am a good person because I don't do X thing. I look over there and I see that person is doing bad, and so if I don't do that, then I am a good person. And what that oftentimes does allows us to overlook our incredible sins, but look at someone else and be like, man, they're sick for doing something like that. What David calls on in this passage is not for God to justify him and vindicate him because he's so good, but instead, I understand I'm weak. I don't do everything right. I struggle with all these problems. I see your greatness. I am not like you. Please help me. Save me. Allow me to see where I'm failing so that I can come closer to you. Which is the motivation. If we look out on everybody else and compare ourselves to everybody else, we're just going to fall in the same traps. Instead, we need a cleansing that comes from God, only one that only He can give. And so he leans on the Lord to protect him from sins of presumption, as well as not allowing these things to have dominion over me. He says, I want you to have dominion, and I want to be blameless before you. I want to be innocent. And that brings us to our final verse, as well as the theme verse for this year. We're going to be working through it and breaking it down through this year. If you want to see the schedule of what we're going to be talking about, it's going to be every second Sunday. That's in the back. So I'm going to be breaking it down more. But as David concludes this psalm, he looks back on the skies, on the words of the Lord, and he says, I want my life to reflect your goodness. The words that I say, the things that my heart ponders, I want those things to bring you glory. I want those things to be acceptable to you. And you know what is comforting about this passage is even when we fail to do that, even when we fail to be consistent, we have the fact that God is the Redeemer, meaning after we have given ourselves away to brokenness and sin, He is the one who brings us back. And He is also our rock, meaning I can find hiddenness in Him. I can be protected by Him. I have shelter in Him. We are in need of a lot of shelter. There's a lot of things we need to be protected from, not only from culture, but ourselves and our own arrogance and our own greed. We need the Lord, and that's what the goal of the meditation is, to know the Lord and to be focused on how I can reflect Him, not only to people in my congregation, but also to the outside world. I've got a couple of things for this year that I'm excited for us to try out, maybe watch the sunset as a group, or one of the other things I've done in my application a lot is try to reflect here some practical things. A lot of my applications for this year that I planned are going to require a lot of writing. And so, if you would like to participate in that, I have bought journals. And so, if you would like a journal, I'll gladly give that to you after service. You can come and see me about it. But I'm hopeful that over the course of this year, we're going to learn about what meditation should be about. The reality is, we already meditate. We already think about things that are chaotic and broken and evil. And the problem is, when we reflect on those things, we become more like them. we will try to use the tools of the world and the tools of the enemy to bring about God's purposes as if that is the case. It can't be. And so we're going to be encouraging faith, hope, and love this year. If there's a way that we can help you, encourage you, and strengthen you to come to know the Lord, anything that needs to be confessed, any other prayers that you need, please let that be known. With that, we'll be learning our invitation song.